And we're pleased to be joined in studio this morning. We need to lead with an apology, Julie. Mm-hmm. We've been saying your name wrong for weeks now. It's Mike Veeley is how we're supposed to say it. We've been, I don't know, I think we've had 3 or 4 different versions
we
of
have.
How we've said the
I
name.
I think Veeley is what we settled on, and yeah. Clearly we were wrong.
So it's V-E-I-L-E. Mike Veeley, welcome to the studio. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Neil and Julie, for having me. And I'll say, you know, growing up with that name, I would go into school and the teachers would always say Mike Veeley or Mike Veeley. And, you know, after a while, I just said, here.
Yeah. You know, I'm here.
Yeah, no reason to correct anyone anymore.
However you say it is fine. You probably get it mispronounced more often than you get it right,
yes,
right?
And you know what? We're used to it. We just roll with it.
All right. Well, we'll do our best to... Veeley's easy to remember, yeah. So mm-hmm. that's good. Good to know. But again, for a little background, we had Representative Andrus. He stepped down from the legislature. The governor appointed you in his stead. So this is actually your first... Name on time on the ballot and running for election for this. How has it been since September being an appointed member of the legislature?
Well, and I thought it was pretty fascinating. You know, there was really about 4 members of the House that were appointed this session. And of course, 3 of us were sitting there in the same cubicle area, and it was a lot of fun. I thought it was a fascinating experience. I know it sounds cliche, but when you walk in there and sat on that floor for the first time, and you're like, this is pretty impressive. This is an honor. And so yeah. I really found it really, really fascinating. I really enjoyed it.
Did you find, like, how politically involved and interested were you before your appointment by the governor?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I will admit that we tend more to national politics. National politics seem to be the loudest and seems to be a little bit more dominating. My interest in state politics, I was on a school board previously, and so I followed education really in depth. Fish and game issues are really high on my list. And so those are issues that I really watched pretty closely. But I think, you know, the loudest voice out there usually comes nationally, and that seems to be a little bit more dominating. But those are the issues that I paid most attention to from a state standpoint.
Okay, well, I've asked you about the political background, but let's go back a little bit more. Introduce yourself. Yeah, I know you live in Soda Springs. You've been there for quite some time, and tell us who you are.
All right, thank you. You know, I grew up in Rexburg, and so went up there, graduated from Rexburg, and then I headed down to Utah State. And I was down there at Utah State where I have a bachelor's, master's degree in mechanical engineering. In that time down there at Utah State, I met this absolutely brilliantly lovely girl that was from Downey. And we've been together now almost 31 years. Oh. And we went to work down there in Utah afterwards at Kennecott doing copper and gold and silver and things like that. And it was a great job, but you were down there in Salt Lake, and the challenge was that we were down there in Salt Lake. So we wanted to figure out how to get back up here to Idaho. Yeah. And so we found an opening up there in Soda Springs, up there making elemental phosphorus. Very, very similar process to what I was doing down there in Salt Lake. Came up there in 98, and I've been up there, you know, working in the phosphate, but we made elemental phosphorus, a little bit different. That type of industry since 98. I left that business a little over a year ago and now do some of my own engineering as a consultant.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's dive into the session. It was a contentious one. There were some difficulties. We were doing a little bit of research. It does appear that maybe you weren't super supportive of House Bill 93. That kind of checks out now that you told us you were on the school board. Tell us what you do like about parent choice and what you don't like, since you're kind of new on the scene of all of that process, because it went for about 3 years.
All right. Thanks, Julie. You know, Idaho has probably about the highest level of parental choice of any state in the country. We get to do pretty much what we want and educate our children how we want. Certainly, the bulk of them is now educated through our public school districts, but we have public charter schools. We certainly have our private schools. We have online schools. We have homeschool, and you can educate your child anywhere you want, and I support that. I support that freedom and that ability to do that, and Idaho has that. It's fostered that. It is, I think, a growing national trend. That's momentum that is moving nationally. And I support parents' rights to do that, full stop.
Okay, so House Bill 93, though, what was your point of opposition to that? I mean, you weren't in the legislature when it passed, but would you consider expanding it? And where do you stand specifically on the parental choice tax credit policy?
Okay, on that one specifically, looking at how we spend our money in the state, okay?
Yeah.
We need to be as efficient as possible. It is in our state constitution that we need to have a fair and free public education for our students. Where I might differ a little bit on House Bill 93 is the ability to go out and fund all these different types of education systems is not inherently efficient. Okay, we have a strong public system that we want to fund, but if everybody has their own system, then we're dispersing limited resources inefficiently. So I don't believe that's efficient. Additionally, the concept of using state funds for private entities, that has normally not been something that, you know, from a conservative standpoint that we have championed, but we're doing it there for education. So along those two lines of thoughts, I would oppose using state tax credits that way.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Immigration was, a hotly contested topic this year in the legislature. And if I was looking correctly, maybe you were a little split on what you wanted from the immigration bills. Sided with the police union or the law enforcement union that, no, they didn't want to mark down the immigration status of those that are arrested. But yes, you were looking at some work like verifications and having to sign in order to make sure illegal immigrants weren't employed. So just give us your overall stance, since there was so much confusion with immigration. How do you feel about illegal immigration in Idaho?
You know, thank you. I'll give you kind of a rundown. There's actually two elements to that question. Okay, there's kind of the law enforcement side of it from the state, and then there's kind of a view on illegal immigration. If it's okay, I'll just kind of talk about my view on illegal immigration. And I look at it as three points on illegal immigration. Number one, stop digging the hole. What I mean by stop digging the hole is have a secure border. President Trump has shown that that is something that can happen. Okay, he has set a standard that all this rhetoric we've heard in the past, we can have a secure border. Okay, that's number one. We stopped digging the hole, and we achieved that. Number two, going forward, I would like to see more of a verification system to make sure that we are employing people that are legal to work in the state. Okay, and I have some more thoughts on that later if we get to it. There's some interesting things. But can we have a simple, secure and verifiable system that we can employ to ensure that we are employing the correct people in the state? Third, we need the federal government to come out there and develop a guest worker program. We have guest worker programs for seasonal workers, but we don't have them for year-round workers. Now, why that matters is it's very salient to the state of Idaho. We are about the third largest dairy state in the country. It is our number one agricultural commodity in this state. And if you go down into the dairies in southern Idaho, that's $3 billion of economy. There's a lot going on there. If we were to automatically eliminate those, you know, the workforce that's down there, we got to go and shoot 500,000 cows tomorrow. So let's get the federal government to give us a proper guest worker program. Let's get them to get that done. Those are the three areas that I really would like to see some movement on.
One of the, and I'll ask you about Senator Harris's bill, because, you know, you guys are probably neighbors. I mean, you're not far from each other, I know. But his bill, and we talked about this at length, actually exempted more farmers from having to use E-Verify than it required. And even though it was sort of put forward as an E-Verify bill, it was actually shielding operators from having to use E-Verify. Were you in agreement with that bill, or would you like to have seen a different approach?
So I certainly would support Senator Harris on that bill. You know, we talked about it. Again, this E-Verify, it seemed like we had, for lack of a better term, extremes. The 704 bill that came out of the House was anybody. And if you think about anybody, Okay, if you're going to pay someone to mow your lawn, you better have E-Verify. And I want you to think about that for a minute, just from the standpoint of what you normally do in your life. Now, do you want the government basically telling you that you just can't go and hire someone to mow your lawn unless you're... Now, if you're hiring a service, it's up to that service to verify their employees. But if you're hiring an individual...
You'd have to do that.
And if you get a moment, and I don't know if people have a moment, but Brandon Shippey wrote a really interesting Substack on this. And I just read this recently. Brandon Shippey, one of our senators over there. And the concept of now that you don't have the ability or the freedom to go out and work as you want or hire someone as you want, that now this is another step of control over the top of us. And I hadn't thought about that at the time when I voted on this 704. It's a really interesting thought. And if you get a moment to read that, because it just seems like another little step of overreach in a way. But so that E-Verify system is what I consider an extreme on one side. I think what Senator Harris's bill is trying to, let's develop something. Let's get something started. Okay, let's see how that works for large entities that have the bandwidth to put a system in place. And now can we start expanding on that? Can we start moving that as we've seen the success of it working or something like that? So I certainly like more of an incremental approach to try and get to a more of an optimum solution.
We're talking with Mike Veeley. He is what is your district that you're in?
District 35.
35. Okay.
There's 35 districts. We're the bottom or the last, but
Hey, we're 107.9, which is at the very top of the dial too, so we can understand that. Okay, I want to ask you another question, and this is another tough question, but you'll have plenty of time to answer. And I think we just haven't heard much about it, and so would like your perspective on this. You are one of four lawmakers invited to a fundraising dinner in Boise by a group of very solidly pro-choice activists. It was you, Senator Guthrie, I believe, Camille Blaylock, as well as Ben Furman. Tell us about that dinner and why you accepted that invitation as a Republican.
So, you know, obviously we know where this is going, so let me just lay out my position on the respect for life, okay? I'd like to have that opportunity to do that, if that's okay.
Sure.
So as I sit here, that position has been curated with me and this lovely lady that's sitting next to me today, over 31 years of our marriage, of our four children, our beautiful granddaughter. And it's also curated from our faith and what we can read on the respect for life and the position on abortion, you know, from the LDS Church, and people can look that up in that. That's what we believe. That is what we believe, full stop. Who I meet with, who I talk to, has no bearing on what we feel in our hearts deeply about the respect for life. That doesn't vary. So putting that out of the way, so I want to make sure that that is, you know, that we're grounded in that. I have met with a lot of people in Boise. Okay, my first year there, I'm meeting with people. And some of these people I met with, you know, they have recognized that I'm kind of a strong education advocate. One of the challenges we have in the state of Idaho is we're short on physicians. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the WAMI program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, Idaho program. Getting seats in medical schools for Idaho students, that's our best avenue for getting physicians back into the state. Rural health care, District 35 has three rural hospitals. We're short on physicians. Okay, Teton Hospital can't even deliver babies. So meeting with these people, they had a night where they were actually talking about WAMI, sitting there talking about how do we get in physicians. And I think they recognize, you know, that we are people that are interested in solving that problem. They say, hey, we're going to do this fundraiser for you. I'm like, nobody's done a fundraiser for me. That sounds great. Yeah, I'd love to come. So I went up there. Okay, here's this organization, but it wasn't at an organization. There was all kinds of different people there. There were different people there from different walks of life. I spoke on education. I spoke on what I valued about education. Other people spoke about, you know, their challenges with healthcare. And I swear the word abortion never came up in any discussion that we had. So I thought, went to that thing. You know, it was a whirlwind trip. I drove from SOTA, got up there, hit that, drove home, got home 1:30 at night. And I thought, hey, this is a good thing. And then things kind of blew up. And I'm like, how did this happen?
Well, and I mean, to give you some grace here, you're a newcomer to politics. You've never done this before, and you're a newcomer to fundraising, especially like this. But in retrospect, you can understand how voters might be concerned that here's a Republican. The platform is clearly pro-life, but you're showing up to a dinner of people who are completely pro-choice and have been very vocal about it. You can understand why voters would have concerns over that.
Oh, certainly. I certainly do understand that. Now, in retrospect, I probably wouldn't do that again, right? But I would certainly, if they're going to sit down and we're going to talk about expanding doctors in the state, yeah, I'll be on board with that, and I'll see what we can do that way. But yeah, when it comes to something like that, you know what? And I'm willing to work with people even if they don't share my values on something that's so personally held, because you know, there's all kinds of people out there. I'm not going to necessarily shun who I work with that way.
Sure, but the fundraising relationship is different.
It than is
working
it is.
People on legislation or whatever. So that I think there is a bit of a contrast there. We should point out.
And I guess I'd have to admit that maybe I learned a little bit of a lesson. I probably should have spent a little bit more time.
You've probably heard a little bit about that, haven't you?
Yes, you know, since then I've definitely heard a lot about it, and again that I will chalk that up to a learning moment. But in saying that, I'm not trying to denigrate those people in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to agree with them on that. But that, you know, I don't want to suggest something otherwise.
Yeah. Okay, so since we're on the topic, Idaho had a pretty strict trigger law that went into place when Roe v. Wade was repealed. Do you align with the trigger law that was put in place, or would you like to see it be reevaluated, maybe changed in some way?
No, I think the trigger law, if you go out there, it's a pretty simple law. That was Senate Bill 1385 in 2020. It's fairly short when you go to read it. And if you read it, it has pretty strong alignment with what are the dictates of our faith. There's some challenges I know that physicians have with that. And what has come out is there's been a number of lawsuits on that that has stood up to all the scrutiny and the lawsuits. And there's now a 90-page opinion that does things that, you know, I will admit I didn't know these things at the time until I started researching a little bit. At first, some of the things you heard like, oh, well, you can't deal with an ectopic pregnancy, for example. But now there's actually a court case. There's language there in that 90. You can look in there, and it specifically says that, yes, you can deal with an ectopic pregnancy. Yeah. It specifically says that doctors have the ability and the discretion to make these choices.
To treat.
Mm-hmm. Okay? And that they have more of discretion in deciding when there is, a life of the mother at risk. And so I think when you pair that 90-page opinion with the Idaho Defense of Life Act, I think you get some really strong alignment with what our faith.
Mike, another controversial topic this year was the teachers union taxpayer bill. You voted against that. Tell us why. Why were you opposed to that bill, which prevents taxpayer resources from going to unions and union activity?
Okay. So again, as I kind of mentioned, you know, I did come off a school board, and I'll have to say that I probably 10, 12, 15 years ago, I might have had a different view on that. But as I got into a school board, I learned a few things. I care about public education, and how do we get strong public education? We get good teachers. And I also care about fiscal discipline and things like that. So this bill comes out, all right? What does it do? Does it make a fiscal impact? And it doesn't. It's de minimis. The amount of taxpayer resources that is going to unions is really almost unnoticeable. It's de minimis. But then what we do is we're doing something that I see where we are taking another cut at teachers. You know, I've worked in industry. I've had a lot of people, you know, reporting to me. People are effective when their morale is up, not when it's down. If I'm damaging the morale of our teachers, we're going to damage the education of our students. So I did not see any juice for this squeeze. I did not see that going out there and passing this law, number one, provides any type of fiscal improvement to the state, but it does do something negative to teachers. So I opposed it. Now, what I'd also like to say is we have history of the National Education Association and what they've done in New York or Chicago or San Francisco, right? And Thomas Sowell, he's talked about these pernicious effects that have happened. And we are not New York or Illinois or California. We're Idaho. And maybe sometimes we hear some things that the IEA might have done maybe in Ada County. And they're like, why are they doing that? Okay. I'm in District 35. In District 35, a minority of our teachers are a member of the teachers union. Two out of three of them are Republicans. When I sat there on a school board, they were amicable. We didn't have any challenges, and I got along with them really well. And so I looked at this 516, and I looked at it from the standpoint, I see no benefit for this bill, and therefore I opposed it.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. Although I do want to give you just a minute or two. Give your stump speech. Why should voters in District 35 vote to reelect you?
Okay. Thank you so much for giving me that. I am, as I told you, I care about public education. Education is number one to me. Okay. I believe that's our future. I believe that's our geopolitical competitive edge that we need to be focused on. Public lands and public access. What I say is bucks, bulls, and berries. That's what I care about. I will die on that hill. I want to make sure our public lands stay public for us and that we can go out there and enjoy them. I care deeply also about, you know, fiscal discipline and local control. I saw this legislative session so much that was coming down from the state. And I'm like, where did this come from? When that you shall. That's not Idaho. Local control. I think, you know, people that are closest, governments as close as the people governs best. I care about our critical industries. That is phosphate. That is INL. That is microchips. That is ag. And I care about water. Right now, District 35 is the ground zero for our whole water fight. We are the Bear River. We are the Teton River, the Snake River, the Portneuf. That is where water needs to be solved. That is a huge problem, a huge project, and I'd like to be part of that.
Okay. Mike Veeley, our guest this morning, his website is Mike Veeley for Idaho. All of them are words, no numbers there, and Veeley is spelled V-E-I-L-E. So, Mike, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
All right.